and welcome to episode 88 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about table talk. In other words, influencing the game by suggesting moves or pointing out someone else's strategy or any meta kind of moves that you might be able to make. Is this okay? Are there limits? Should we all just sit quietly staring at the board listening to that one guy breathe really loudly? Maybe. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, and Corey Bell. And a thank you to Jeremy Fisher for increasing your pledge. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy's actually sends me a ton of Kickstarter tips and stuff. So he gives me all this inside knowledge. I don't know if it's inside knowledge, but I get a lot of Patreon communications through him. Now he's going to our new email, though, podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. So, news and announcements. This is going to be probably one of the quickest ones. I'm actually going to be at Gaming Hoopla this weekend. Again, no one else will be, but I'm just throwing it out there. That's where I'll be. It's in the middle of nowhere, it's northeast Illinois to most people. It's on the east side. It's northwest of Chicago. It's Mundelein, Illinois. So, if you're in that area, Gaming Hoopla, I will be there this weekend. Probably most of the day Saturday. And if somebody were to say, hey, I'm going to be there Friday, I'll probably be there too. Friday as well. The one that I'm more excited about being at, not that Gaming Hoopla is not great, is the CMON Expo in Atlanta on May 11th through 13th. So if you're in Atlanta or you're going to be at that convention, let me know and we'll meet up. And last but not least, our April giveaway is coming to an end pretty quickly, I think. It's 1 week left. So you have to enter by the 27th of this week. I don't know that I've actually said the date yet because I haven't written it in the notes. So end of April is your typical. So April 27th is the Friday, I believe, and then we'll give you till Saturday. So April 28th. To enter this, what are you winning? You're winning Warhammer Shadespire, the core set. It is opened and the pieces are assembled and painted by me. So you'll get a pre-painted, pre-assembled miniatures. This is a really easy game to get into. It's just a two-player tactical miniatures game, but it plays more like a board game slash card game. There's no tape measures or anything like that. And it plays very quickly, too. It's just a set number of turns, and the winner wins. So you can enter, and the winner wins. Yes, that's probably obvious. You can enter by sending us an email at giveaway@tabletopgametalk.com with the subject April giveaway. Give me your full name and country of origin. If you're outside of the U.S., let me know that you're willing to pay for shipping, and you will be entered.
I'm looking forward to the giveaway where all the losers win.
That's going to be, I've been thinking about it. I'm like, how do I just give everybody who listens to us something? And I'm like, that would cost a bit. We'll have to add another Patreon stretch goal.
Content or something.
Yeah. Oh, I could do that. Yeah. That's true. We need to set some other Patreon goals. So that's like, you know, watch Josh play a Euro game with us.
Yeah.
And that'd be like a 5-hour thing.
How dare you? I'm getting better.
You are getting better. You are getting a lot better. I will admit this for sure. So Kickstarter. This week I backed Unbroken, a solo game of survival and revenge. So there's a pledge level where you can name a monster, and there's like 32 people can pledge there. And when I went to back it was like one left. I'm like, okay. So
was that an expensive click?
It was not the cheapest of the clicks.
Right.
So the game itself is actually fairly inexpensive. It's only $29 for the core game. For $59, you can get some added stuff on there. And then for whatever ridiculous amount I paid, you can get a name of character. I think it's only like $60 or $70 more.
Okay. That's reasonable.
So I want to do something with my last name, like The Steel or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
That'd be a good monster name, right?
Sure.
So if you back Unbroken, you could potentially, you know, have my name card.
So the name of this game is throwing me off because Unbroken is also the movie and book about a tale of survival where the plane is down in the ocean and they survive and they go to the prisoners of war.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Unbreakable with Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis.
No. Yeah, I was thinking Unbreakable.
No,
yeah.
It is literally named Unbroken.
Oh.
And it is a tale of survival, and it is throwing me off, and I like have to keep telling myself. So describe the world of this one, which has nothing to do with the movie or book of the same name.
Yeah, completely unrelated. The premise is you went into this dungeon with an adventuring party. Everyone got killed except for you. So you have nothing and you're trying to get out of this dungeon. All you're trying to do is just survive. Just get out. Wow. So, and it's a purely solo game. You're, you know, flipping up cards. You're trying to, you know, resource management. You're building things. In fact, if you explain it like that, it sounds very much like Seventh Continent, which I talked about last week. And Terrence actually asked a question, Unbreakable versus Seventh Continent. Even though the ideas are the same, like, it kind of feels like they're sort of playing the same way, the whole card mechanics and stuff. They are like comparing the D&D, an episode of the D&D cartoon with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Like, Seventh Continent is just massive, epic, you know, dozens of hour adventure storyline, where Unbreakable is a 20-minute sit-down, play a solitaire escape scenario.
Okay.
I think there is a decent amount related between the two. If I was just going to bring a game with me someplace, I'd probably just grab Unbroken because I can play it very quickly. If I'm going to be traveling for a vacation, I know I'm going to have a lot of time, I might bring Seventh Continent because it does actually travel quite well. Again, you have the whole cards in a box thing. Security is going to stop you and say, hey, what are all these cards? And then they're going to throw them all up and they're not going to be sorted. And then you're going to be like, I can't believe you just did that. I'm going on a tangent. But anyway, that's Unbroken. That is what I backed. It has nothing to do with the movies. Two Kickstarters to talk about. The first one is Terminator Genisys, Rise of the Resistance, based on the actual movie Terminator. It's actually, I think it's based on, isn't there was a Terminator Genisys movie, right? It's like Terminator 5 or 6 or something.
Yeah, I want to say it was one of the movies, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the more recent ones. So the concept here is a co-op game for 1 to 4 players. It's scenario-based or you can do campaign-based. And it's your typical module or map, set it up. That all that stuff is kind of standard fare, really cool miniatures. But the interesting thing about this is the way that you control your character is kind of interesting. You roll dice, six-sided dice, and then you place them on different actions you can take. And depending on the value of the die and the action you choose, you can do that action, you know, better or worse. So, for example, like movement. You have two different places you can put movement dice. If I roll a 3, I can move 3 spaces. If I roll a 7, or well, I can't roll a 7 on a 6-sided die. But if I roll a 4, I have 2 movement spaces. So I can put a 3 and a 4, then I can move 7. So, but maybe I want to shoot. So maybe if I rolled a 6, I can move 6, or maybe I want to put that on my weapon to activate the weapon. So it seems pretty cool. It's $86 for the base game, $148 if you want the base game and the expansion. There's some special miniatures and extras and stuff, so you can go up to $250. Ooh. If you want to back this. I didn't see that it was Kickstarter exclusive. I'm not 100% sure it's not, but if you're into Terminator, this one looks like a pretty cool one.
The question is, do they have any really cool Arnie quotes in the game?
There is a special Arnold Schwarzenegger CGI age back 45 years miniature that you can get. So it's like,
come with me if you want to live.
That the sort of Kickstarter preview, like, it has clips from the movies, and one of them is like old Arnold jumping out of an helicopter saying, I'll be back, you know, when he's like going down and the helicopter explodes. So, but it's worth watching the Kickstarter video even if you don't want the game. It's still interesting. That goes till April 30th, and that is Terminator Genisys. So the other one is Dobbers, Quest for the Key. Now, this one's a little, this I think is what Kickstarter is really kind of meant for. And this is two drastic extremes. So the first one, we have this super, you know, huge license, miniatures blown all over the place. Dobbers is a game made by basically a dad who wrote a comic and like he did all the art for it, I think like 10 or 15 years ago. And now he has kids that are in the game playing range and they've been reading this comic. He's like, I want to bring this world alive a little bit more. So he created a board game around this comic. And the art is actually really, really good. I don't say actually isn't surprised. I'm just saying it's you know, for a one man person, that's probably operation. Better than a one man non person. One man operation. The production quality on this is really good. I took a look at the rule book and it's pretty nice. The mechanics of it are actually cool too. It's a light deck builder. So you're buying cards from a market. You're equipping your character with cards. So you have cards that stay in play in front of you, and then you can play cards out of your hand. You also have a different shape cards, which are traps and obstacles that you are also buying, and you're putting on a board. And you're all trying, everyone who's playing, it's not a cooperative, it's competitive, and you're always all trying to go and get this key. But you are putting traps in front of other people, and when they hit that, they have to flip it up, and they have to do whatever those obstacles are and overcome them with the cards in their hand. A lot of them have negative effects even if you succeed, because they are, you know, obstacles of some case or so. But it looks really, really cool. Coincidentally, this happens to be a friend of one of our listeners, Michael Ohl, who's very active in, you know, giving us all kinds of cool feedback. Thank you, Michael. I think we have some from you today. We do. It's in actually the Board Game Geek thread. We won't actually say it out loud, but if you're curious, go check it out. But anyway, so he like pointed this out as a friend of his, and we're going to talk to him for the next side chat. So if you want to get more information, I'm really interested in the background and the history of this. But the game looks really cool. And it's not crazy expensive. The base game is only $39. If you want to get, for $64, you can get a copy of the original comic and an art print with it. So for $39, it's not just a card game. There's actually a board there too. It's a board game. That's really not bad. And then if you really want to go crazy and support them all the way through, and I haven't decided I'm going to do this, so, but you can, for $290, you can become a character in the game.
Wow.
So maybe I'll go on a rampage and find all the Kickstarters that offer me, put my name in the game, or give me a monster.
A new addiction, I feel.
It could be fun. This one ends on May 18th, and that's Dobbers, Quest for the Key. All right, review time. So every week, Sydney asked me, it's like, what Kickstarter are you going to review? Or do we need to play a Kickstarter game or whatever? So it actually kind of pushes me through my red sticker games, the games I haven't played. And we didn't have a lot of time, and this week's been really crazy. We've been playing a lot of games, but just like games we played before. So I'm like, all right, well, I have this small box. Let's just play this. The box says it's only like a 30-minute game. And she's like, okay, yeah, that seems fine. This game is called Impulse. Impulse Second Edition, to be specific. It's by a designer named Carl Chudik. He designed a game called Innovation, and if you played Innovation, you know that it's basically just it's a sea of icons.
Yeah,
it's a great game, but it's really, really heady. Like, you know, you're playing cards and your things, and you're counting up icons. And if you have more icons than I do, then you can follow me on the action. But if you don't, you can't follow me. So I'm trying to pay attention to what everything's going on here. You're trying to go through 10 technologies. That's not Impulse. That's just his previous game. But I think a game that most people are probably familiar with if you like those kinds of games. This one happens in space. And what happens here is, I'm going to try to paraphrase this. It's essentially a race game. You're trying to get to 20 points before anyone else gets there. There's over 100 cards in the deck that you're drawing from. So it's basically just a deck of cards and some little plastic spaceships. When you start out, you're starting out on opposite ends of this base galaxy thing made up of these cards. They're all face down. You're about 5 cards away from everybody. So it makes a hex, even though you're making it out of rectangle cards. And you're trying to, if you're in the center of the galaxy, you get a point for patrolling the center. And there's 6 different gates that you can control, so you could get points that way. And every turn, you could get a point. So that's a slow way to get things. But there's 10 different actions on these cards. So you have your command action that lets you move. You have your mine action, which lets you take a card and like tuck it under your tableau. Your refine action allows you to turn those mined cards into points. Your trade action allows you to discard cards from your hand and turn those into points. You can also, there's plan actions that allow you to build up actions you can take in the future. Sabotage that allows you to kill ships without fighting them. You can build ships, you can draw cards, you can research, which upgrades your technologies. All this stuff that you can do really just to get to 20 points. But there's really cool mechanics in here where when I want to take an action, I have to add a card to the impulse. The impulse is this row of actions. The first person who plays, there is no other actions. So I play a thing, I play a command. All right, now, once I've played that card, I'm going to execute all of the cards in the impulse. So I'm going to play my command, I'm going to move. If I move on to a space that's unexplored, I'm going to pick up that card that's face down, add it to my hand, choose a card from my hand, put it into space face up, and then I can take that action because I just moved there. Now Kitty takes a turn. She has to add a card to the impulse. So now she's taking the command action and then whatever card she just added. And then Josh goes and adds another card. And then I go and I add another card. So I take four actions now. At that point, the impulse doesn't get too crazy because as soon as you have four at the end of your turn, you get rid of the oldest one. But that mechanic is really kind of a cool concept.
Oh, so you're building up a pool of actions that you can all then... You will all then execute all of those actions.
Yep, all of those.
You must do each action?
No, you can skip any of them.
Okay.
But everybody, like you're putting an action down, you put a build action down. Everybody can take that build action.
If they want to.
If they want to. So, and you have to execute them in order. What makes it even cooler is that mine action allows you to, each card has a color and a size to it. So yellow, red, green, and blue, and a size 1, 2, or 3. Well, if I have, you know, a three blue card mined, so I have three little pips, for all of these cards have a number on them. And for every two pips of the same color as the card you have, that number increases by one. So I might put down a build and it says build one ship in your home territory. Well, I have four pips stored, so I actually build three ships in my home territory. Ooh. But neither of you have that. So it's okay for me to put this down there because you're just building one ship each.
There's some deep strategy here.
There's a lot. Ooh. So, and then your plan is another, it's like a private set of cards. And once it gets to four, you have to execute it, but you can just keep storing cards away there. And then on your turn, be like, okay, now I'm going to do this and I'm going to execute my plan. I do this, I mine here, I do this, I trade. And you go from having 6 points to 20 points and you win. So that's really kind of like you build up these combos, or maybe you build up these engines in space, or you build up these engines on your tableau. It's a really cool game. Way cooler than the box. Like the box is kind of neat looking, but the game inside of it, I just like it. I like it.
Did it actually play in 30 minutes?
It did. Yep.
Awesome.
I didn't think it was, because when we first started out, we had no idea of strategy or anything. So we both went to the center and like, okay, we took a turn, I got a point. You took a turn, you get a point. And then Sydney discovered that she put a mine and a refine right next to each other. And then she was just using command cards, because the command moves your ships. So she moved her ship, took the action, moves her ship, takes the action. So she was mining and refining back and forth. And in two turns, she went from 3 points to 20 points. And I'm like, but I know that I could have gone and attacked her had I known that that was even an option. Right. So yeah. It takes a few games before you understand all the nuances.
So but you have to give it a few tries before you really understand how cool the game is.
But a 30-minute game, you can play three times in a row in an hour and a half, and it doesn't feel like, it's like, oh, okay. And you know, three games is enough to kind of get the strategy, feel like you've gotten enough of a play without...
like wasting a lot of time.
Taking up your whole night.
Yep.
Yeah. Or weekend even.
Yep. I really like this. It doesn't take up too much table space, but it's still, like I say, it's five cards tall and five cards wide. So it takes up that much table space.
Not a restaurant game.
Yeah, it's not a restaurant game, but it could be a work lunchtime game if you're like, let's just pull out a quick game and play this. And it plays 2 to 6 players. So depending on how many players, your different starting area in the galaxy is different. And we only played 2 players. So there, the impulse, those 4 cards you're building up, is more important because you're both playing off of them. I hear in larger player counts, because I play a card, I'm not going to play that card again because there's 5 other people that win. But then the galaxies start getting smaller, and it's your local space and those engines in space that become more interesting. So depending on the number of players, it changes your strategy and your tactics on it as well.
That's cool.
So anyway, if you can't tell, I really like this game. It's called Impulse. Take a look and see what you think of it. All right, Josh.
So we have some feedback. Let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So the first is from Sean, who says, I sympathize with Kitty. I had trouble separating myself from the article last week.
We should probably interrupt and... note that this is about our last episode. We talked about the Wirecutter article. Most of this feedback is
about gateway games, I guess, or mainstream games. Yeah. That if you're not a gamer, these could be a good
The title was Our Favorite Games for Adults.
Right.
Which got Kitty and I We had a conversation.
Finish reading Sean's. Yeah.
So he sympathizes with Kitty and had trouble separating himself from the article. Not that it was bad necessarily. However, I've noticed anytime you see something you know a lot about being talked about in the news, they always miss the mark a little bit. But I think that's a projection of my expectations.
All right. So I got a little feisty about this article last week. And I think what Chris just brought up, the title of the article, is what angered me more than the article itself. And I think our favorite board games for adults is like the best board games to me. Like, that's what that kind of says, is like, oh, if you click on this, like, these are really great board games. But what it really was is an intro to board games if you don't play them as an adult already.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely.
And maybe I didn't make that point very clear. Yeah. I got a little feisty, a little worked up about this.
Yeah, and it is a mainstream article, which was. Yes. So for that, I can see it. Because when I look at something at media out there, I'm looking for top 10, whatever, you know, those, like all the Dice Tower stuff and things like that. They are geared towards hobbyist games for sure. And those are all their favorite games and whatever topic. For this, it could have fallen into our favorite gateway games for adults. That would have been probably...
I would have had no issue with that article at all. Then I would have been like, oh, what a great resource for people just getting into gaming.
Yeah.
But our favorite board games for adults, I was like, well, I love playing board games. I'm an adult. There's nothing on this list that feels very applicable to me.
Right. Yeah. But I think the term gateway game was probably still above the target audience for this article too. So it might have been a tricky one. But we have more feedback on this.
All right. So we'll continue to. I riled people up. from Sam. I will agree with you on the target demo of the article. When I first got into gaming, I frequently looked for articles and websites like that to help me explore what games I may be interested in. These articles are a valuable resource for the novice and new gamers. And frankly, if it's an article that's geared to a large non-hobbyist audience, it's important to discuss the games that are more readily available. The types of article Kitty is asking about exist on BGG and Reddit forums, as well as on Dice Tower and a plethora of other websites and YouTube channels, and even brick-and-mortar game stores. I imagine a lot of hobbyists who are looking for the next level games eventually become familiar with these resources. So my point is, I don't think that's true. I think that there's like a middle ground between gateway games and deep into the hobby. And that's where I feel like there's kind of a missing piece where, you know, like, maybe this could be filled with something like, I don't know, what are some like nerdier outlets? Like maybe Wired or like one of those kinds of websites that does this could like, oh, hey, you love Ticket to Ride. What's the next game for you? Because if you're not, if you're content playing Ticket to Ride but might want something more and you're not searching that out, it's not going to come to you. Yeah. I feel like all of these ones that are mentioned here, you have to look for them. You have to be like, this is my thing. You have to be a hobbyist. You have to be into it. And I think like there's a middle ground for people. Like, I'm thinking of my sister here. She loves playing Ticket to Ride with her friends. They played Resistance, but like, I don't know that she would like ever go into a game store and ask for advice. And those stores can be so overwhelming.
Well, and you don't even know where to start.
It's the same thing as being a beginner at some point. Like if you bought all of these games at Target or on Walmart, like, you know, you don't have that next step available. You have to like, I think that there's something like lead you deeper into the rabbit hole without jumping in by yourself.
Yeah. And I definitely see your point there, because you have to go, all of these gaming stores, even Dice Tower, which is a very friendly, you know, lots of YouTube videos and stuff, you still have to go out and seek it.
Yes.
It's
a searching thing have to look for it.
Yeah, there are some magazines out there that are like Casual Gamers Weekly and things like that. Actually, I don't know if that's an actual thing, but I know that things like that exist. You see it a lot more in the video game market, though. If you go to the newsstand and you'll see tons of video game magazines. You will not see a whole bunch of board game magazines. There's a couple out there, but they're super rare, especially in the States. I think, you know, Europe has a lot more of this. It's a lot more of it, just a well-known hobby But here it's a little bit trickier to see that middle ground stuff where I don't have to go searching for it. So
I don't know. Maybe that just doesn't exist for any hobby. Like you gateway and then you have to take the step down. Yeah. But I don't know.
You're either in it or you're not.
You're in it or you're not. I don't know. Yeah. And like, it's weird because I don't think a lot of hobbies have this like water, like toes in the water gateway, like place where you can stay kind of forever. You can like live in the shallows forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we compared it a lot to books and movies and things like that, but those get a lot more media coverage as well.
Yes.
You know, so books is like, oh, I really like fantasy books. Okay. Well, what fantasy books do you read? It's like, well, I read this one author because that's the one thing I know. And then once you start talking to people, you start getting recommendations and then you start researching.
Also, books have recommendations on them. Like, so like I read romance novels. And a lot of romance novels will have like quotes from other authors like, oh, I really liked this. That's like a step for me to take. Like, oh, if Nora Roberts liked this book, maybe I should go read some more Nora Roberts books or something like that, where like the thing itself can lead you deeper.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have like something on the board game saying, well, if you liked this other game, you'll probably like this. And maybe in the future there'll be kind of a link to a QR code, your phone scans it, and then you get a little video explaining the game box that you're looking at. Well, I mean, I don't know if that already
exists. The future is here. It does exist. Ah. Just not, it's just not very common.
Right.
So, yeah. And you'll see quotes on some games, but again, not very common.
Right.
So it makes it a little tricky. And you still have to walk into the game store.
Yeah.
You know?
There's also, like you have to walk in the game store. Like Barnes & Noble, if you buy a book at Barnes & Noble, they print out a little receipt with you that says, you might enjoy these titles. And it's got like four or five other books related to the titles that you purchased.
See, now
that day.
There is a Flags hot tip. So your friendly local game store, start doing that. All right, we got a couple more feedbacks and then we'll... Josh.
Sure. It's from Jasmir. It seems the definition of mass market games is a bit muddled. I sense Kitty's definition was any game found in Walmart or Target, but these vendors only really stocked these games in the last couple of years. I think, for me at least, the better definition for mass market game is one that doesn't take any in-depth planning or strategy and are dominated by luck. Roll and moves like Monopoly and Life practically play themselves, and Uno reduces any choice you have to two or three cards that don't really have any effect on the game. Ticket to Ride, on the other hand, has planning and strategy when considering what route cards to take, and should I grab that route now before someone else takes it, or will that be showing my hand too early?
So I both am entertained by this definition of mass market games, and I have to defend mass market games a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. It's missing a few there, yeah.
So I don't know that saying something that requires no real strategy or is based on luck is a really... It does cover a large amount of mass market games. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think that's the definition of it. What I think you're touching on, though, is a game that is easy to get into, that doesn't require a lot of thinking, and that you can play over and over again very easily and feel like you always have a chance to win, those games can become mass market games pretty easily. However, only if backed by the right companies, because there's a lot of really bad games out there that have no strategy and no depth, and I would definitely not call them mass market games. So there's something else there. And this is, we did an entire episode on mass market games.
I also think there's a difference between mass market games and mainstream games.
Yes.
And I think I was trying to hint more towards these are more mainstream. They're more familiar, that they don't necessarily fall into that mass market. And I think more and more quality games are becoming mass market games because the market wants better games.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and you're getting distributors that are starting to push these into the bigger box stores as well, which we have a follow-up.
Okay, so
actually, yeah, this one's for you.
All right. From Jason, I don't agree with Kitty's call for an advanced players section. This article didn't need that addition. There were enough nuggets to help newcomers and beginners go down that rabbit hole, which is our hobby. It will lead to more advanced games. I feel if this article came out a year ago, Kitty may have been more in line with Chris.
I think what Jason's saying is back when you didn't know anything, you would have agreed with me. I kid.
It's not what he's saying. But like, I don't know.
I think it goes back to...
I've been a toe dipper for a very long time. And I think I just kind of like started following the rabbit hole when we got into this. Like, because I was familiar with pretty much all the games on this list going back, you know, as long as they've been out.
Yeah.
My mom got me Ticket to Ride like a decade ago, it feels like, for Christmas. Me and Spencer used to play Catan when we were in college. Like, you know, this is not something that's totally brand new to me. And I do feel like maybe I would have gone a little bit further into the hobby on my own without Chris dragging me in if there had been maybe more of this middle ground kind of don't have to search it out stuff available.
So say imagine, so Ticket to Ride and Catan, both are games that were mentioned in the article. And yes, actually Catan was mentioned as, no, that was a recommended
one. It was,
one. So if you saw those two games, you know, you played those games, you liked them. If you saw those two games like, oh, I like these. Oh, there's these other games that they're talking about as well. Huh. Maybe I should go check those out. I think that's what kind of starts leading you down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I know one or two of these. Now I want to know the others. Versus now, you know all of them.
See, maybe there were like two on the list that I hadn't been familiar with, but most of the ones on that list I have been familiar with for like, it feels like a decade, unless they are literally not that old.
Right. But just step back and, you know, just remember the you that only knew one or two of these games.
I just like, I wasn't ever that person. And that's like what's hard for me. And I'm just not the target audience for this article. And I don't like its title because it seemed like it was selling itself as, oh, Kitty, you'll like this article. Yeah. And I didn't.
Yeah.
That's it. I just didn't like it. And it wasn't for me.
Yeah. It sounds, I think Sam mentioned it, or someone just mentioned it, where whenever I watch any TV crime show where there's a digital image and it's like, enhance that section, always going to be something where I'm like, that's ridiculous. Or the other one, anytime, and this is usually on sci-fi shows, where it's like, how long is that database search going to take? It's going to take 5 more hours. No, you don't know that. It's a search. You don't know how long it's going to take.
Yeah.
So those types of things, because I know more about it, I'm more critical on what they're talking about. Here, you know, this is more in relation to, and we didn't get all the content. There's been a lot of feedback on this one. But someone else mentioned like, if this article was written for a middle school class, you'd say, okay, this is pretty good for a middle school level. But if this was for board games 101 in college, you'd say, okay, this is like middle school level. Why are you talking to me like this? So if you think of the article was focused at the middle school class, not offending anybody who this article resonated with.
I'm loving this, so keep going.
So if you're saying this was meant for a earlier education level of games, I think this article was good. If you're saying, wait a minute, this should have been an advanced article, that's where the disconnect can happen.
So here's the thing. So this felt like a middle school level article. And that's fine. And
not in writing quality, just as how it relates to board games.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then I feel like Reddit, BGG, all these things that you have to search out are college level. I'm saying, like, could we get some high school level curriculum out there?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's my only point.
And I also agree with your point that the title wasn't worded the best.
Yeah.
I mean, and so that threw you, and that's, I think that's understandable.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
And I think if you, so I just did like a quick Google and I said, what board game should I play? And I get tons of these articles, these lists that list a lot of the same games over and over again, the same gateway games. And, you know, some of them have like categories, some of them are flowcharts, and they bring you to kind of the same 10 to 20 choices
Target,
of
Walmart games, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine. But like, you know, I think that it's unfair to some, you know, games, especially games that are like lesser known, maybe that like have a little bit deeper strategy, but are still really fun and not that hard to learn.
Yeah. Well, I will warn the audience right now, we're going to go a little long, but to follow up with that, I think that's a fair point because we have a term, gateway games. You know, what brings people into the hobby? We do not have anything from gateway to TI4. Like, there's no term for that.
Couch to 5K games.
Exactly.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah. It's almost like Segway games, right? It's like, how do we get from gateway to some of these heavier things? And not everyone's going to enjoy that. You know, you don't always go to the extreme of your hobby.
Couch to 5K, like, you know, metaphor continues. everyone can probably get to a 5K, but not everyone's going to run a marathon.
Exactly. All right. So we have actually, Jason mentioned one other thing that I thought was interesting. He's like, games like Ticket to Ride and Catan are missing one element to make them monopoly status, and that's advertising. And this is probably its own topic by itself, but this is interesting.
Yeah.
There is so little advertising about with hobby board games. Practically none. And that's really, if you want to have a definition for mass market games, it's the ones that are advertising during cartoons.
Honestly, I watch a lot of children's programming, but I don't do it on cable. And I don't know how many kids do it on cable anymore. I don't see board game advertisements at all anymore, really.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about this, everything I remember is from my childhood. I can't remember seeing a board game advertised to me ever since... I gave up cable.
Around the holidays, you might get something that's very tied into a license. So you might get the new Star Wars Clue game or something like that mentioned. But yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, producers, publishers, distributors, advertising is a big deal. And we don't advertise this hobby. And it's a sad thing because I think people would really be drawn to it. We advertise, you see video game ads all the time. You know, there's... Video games aren't anything magical. They are just popular because they're easy to be advertised to. They're also much easier to learn, but that's beside the point. All right. Tom sent us a great list for starter games that he recommends. Things like, because we asked, you know, what games would you recommend? So he has like these easy to play starter ones. He has some medium level ones, some brain crunchers. And I was going to go through these. I'm going to post them in the show notes so that you can have access to them. And this is kind of going to be a... We'll bring it back up in our Couch to 5K episode, which will be really poorly named if you're just browsing through the names. But we will bring that back because we're running pretty long on time. So let's get on topic.
In this episode, we're talking about table talk. When is it okay? When should it be limited? Should it be limited at all? Let's start with a scenario sent in by Patrick.
Yeah. So Patrick sent me an email, and I sensed that he was actually torn about what happened. So I'm going to describe this email. This is from memory. I'm not reading it.
Everyone, close your eyes.
Close your eyes. Everyone imagine.
Unless you're driving, don't close your eyes.
Don't close your eyes. No.
But imagine yourself as Patrick.
Yeah. One eye closed. You're playing a game of Scythe. It's a five-player game. You are a pretty hardcore gamer. You get into the game. And you have one other friend that you're playing with who gets pretty into the game as well. Three of your other friends they're there for basically the social aspect of it. They like playing the game. It's fine. But they don't really get into all the strategy of it. Now, Scythe is a game where there's not a lot of direct player involvement unless you're next to that player. So there is some, you have mechs, you can run around and you can try to attack people. But if you're on the other side of the board, there's really not much you're going to interact with for that person. And Scythe ends as soon as somebody gets the required number of stars to trigger the end of the game. So Patrick was playing this game and he noticed that his competitive friend, we're going to call this competitive friend was... trying a strategy where he's like, I'm not going to deploy any mechs. So this is how I'm just not going to deploy any mechs. He announced it at the beginning of the game. I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this, and this is how I'm going to win. So Patrick's like, okay, he's watching competitive friend actually achieve this strategy. But he notices his non-competitive friend sitting next to competitive friend. I love this analogy right now. I told you I was paraphrasing this. So wasn't stopping competitive friend from achieving that goal, but he could have. He was right there. All he had to do is do that. So Patrick spoke up. It's like, why? What are you doing? You're letting him do what he said he was going to do when you could do this and you could stop him. So non-competitive friend's like, oh yeah, I didn't see that. So I'll go do that. So stopped competitive friend from doing the thing, and then Patrick won the game.
Right.
Now this scenario happens a lot in lots and lots of games where anytime. Euro games are very prone to this because very little player interaction. You can't necessarily stop someone from doing a strategy short of a few different placements where you actually have to sacrifice your own strategy to actively defend against or block someone else's strategy in many of these games. Is it okay to use non-competitive friend in that way?
It's a tough one. I mean, I mean, we all like bristle a little bit at the idea that of using other people to manipulate the board and kind of manipulate play. The counter argument, I guess, to saying it's a bad thing would be to say, well, you know, competitive friends could have counter manipulated back and said, well, you could do that, but then this person's going to win. So you can't just go after me. Or they could have used another non-competitive friend to do a similar thing. But it's a tricky one. It doesn't feel like fair play. It doesn't feel nice.
Okay, so I'm going to play both sides here a little bit. I think in this situation, it was okay because competitive friend made the called shot.
Okay.
If you state your strategy, you're like making yourself a target. You're, I think, allowed to like, oh, well, if you're like, you're so confident that you're like, I'm telling you what I'm going to do and I'm being like, you know, I'm not being secretive about it at all. Like, you're allowed to like kind of try to take him down. Like, I feel like they're like setting out a challenge for like, try to take me. I'm going to do this. Right. And that's a little bit more fair.
Okay. I see that.
But if competitive friend had been just like quietly doing the strategy, like getting away with it, and Patrick saw it and then pointed it out to somebody else that that was what was going on, I feel like that's a little bit different somehow.
Well, also, I'm starting to think, I wonder the context of whether Patrick had had anyone impinge on his. If there's one player on the board getting a huge advantage because no one is touching them, mainly out of ignorance because other people aren't noticing it, and you're getting attacked from all sides or impinged on from all sides, then it's like, well, this person's just winning because no one's noticing what's happening. Like,
yeah.
I'm across the other side of the board. I can't do anything. The only way I can do anything right now is to say something. And if I don't, then competitive friend is just going to win because other people aren't noticing. It really is a tough one. But yeah. I don't know how much Patrick was being impinged by other people.
Well, and that's a slippery slope, though, because now you're saying, well, in certain situations, it would be okay.
Yeah.
But in other situations, it might not be okay. So where does
That's all morality. That's morality in general for you, but in my mind.
But we're talking in the same game. So it's okay if competitive friend called it. So now it's like, okay, we can all gang up to try to stop competitive friend from doing this. It's okay if competitive friend's getting away with non-competitive friends next to him when my non-competitive friends next to me are just accidentally, you know, impeding on my territory.
Stepping on my toes.
Right.
Or if they're like, you know, there's like different levels of non-competitive friends and like they're just competitive enough to stop you from doing your thing, whereas the person next to him is just like not even interested in some way. Like, oh, I'm sitting in this chair because it requires a certain player count. Like,
yeah, and also new and ignorant to the rules that they just really have no idea compared to other people on the table.
Yeah.
Well, and this gets into a whole bunch of other things too. So one of the episodes I really want to do is the magic circle concept, where when you start playing something, when you start doing anything, you agree as a group what you're trying to accomplish. And if somebody's not in that agreement, they break the circle for everybody.
Yeah.
So maybe having non-competitive friend there, maybe that's already broken the circle because they're not playing to the best of their ability or to the ability of competitive friend and Patrick. So
I wouldn't even say ability. I would say like
experience level.
Not even experience level, just like the same commitment.
Right.
If you're, even if you're not good at a game, if you're trying as hard as you can, you can't be mad at them.
Correct. No, exactly. True.
But if you're not trying, if like, you know, you're on your phone between turns, you're not looking at what's happening to the board, that kind of thing feels different. And like if there's one person who's doing that, who's not affecting the play of a player when everyone else is in the circle, then it does feel like pointing out to them, like, you need to stop this. Like, yeah, you need to pay attention to the game. That doesn't feel like you're ganging up table talk, influencing the game.
Yeah, you're making suboptimal moves, which is allowing this other person to win.
Yeah.
Where if you just made optimal moves, even maybe just for yourself, it would still be an even game at that point. But now we get into a different situation, though. So magic circle, now non-competitive friend, he's a kingmaker.
As in his actions were what
will determine who's going to win the game.
Right.
Now, non-competitive friend isn't going to win. They know their popularity is low. They don't have enough stars, whatever the case. And you have Patrick and competitive friend both saying, hey, and Patrick, I'm sorry, we're using you as a generic Patrick, but generic Patrick and competitive friend have non-competitive friend, and they're both trying to manipulate them because whatever competitive friend does is going to win the other person the game. Again, not necessarily in this game of Scythe, but this is the type of things where table talk really comes into play, and should it. But if it shouldn't, what do you do about it?
It's hard because, like, you know, impeding on other people's choices and things, that is part of the game. And so I guess we're talking about the very narrow thing of whether you're calling other people out or manipulating other people to do that thing. But they've still got to choose it on some level. I mean, you know, the other person could have decided that was morally wrong, right? And they could have been like, no, I'm not going to do that because that's not fair. You've influenced me. But they were like, oh, yeah, maybe I will do that for whatever reason. And it's hard to say, you know, because if I'm the weaker player and I have to choose, I can be a kingmaker now. Who am I going to choose between? Often it's just whoever's like kind of got my goat during the game the most because they impeded me more. And if it's like if Chris has been like, you know, hammering me more consistently than Kitty, then I'm like, I'm going to screw Chris over and make sure Kitty wins just out of spite now.
Yeah. Well, I think games that have that kingmaker,
like, I hate it.
Yeah, ability in it.
It makes me feel so bad. I'm just like, the game ends here.
Yeah.
I have decided that no one wins.
Yeah, and you have to be really careful. And a lot of territory control or elimination games and things like that do have that king-making problem. Like, we talk about the alpha player problem in co-op games a lot. I think the king-maker problem is even worse than the alpha player problem.
Yeah.
So much so that I'm adding it to the list of episodes to talk about, so we don't have to fully go into it here. Let's switch games and switch concepts a little bit. So let's say that non-competitive friend is really just, you know, looking to get better, but nobody's saying anything, nobody's doing anything because table talk is kind of, you know, taboo, so we don't say anything. How does this person get better if you don't present choices?
Are they actually getting better, or are they just getting away with it?
Right.
If they try this strategy in a really competitive game because they're like, oh, it worked so well for me last time, is it to their benefit then?
Oh, well, you just turned it to, is competitive player even getting better? Which is, because I was talking non-competitive player. I give non-competitive player tips saying, hey, this is I can prevent. But you're right,
competitive player. Yeah.
Yep. So
we need to come up with more names. I'm getting confused.
All right. Well, let's switch to, so we're doing research on Eurogames. And we think that there's some tendency for Eurogames to have this kind of problem at times. When you're all kind of going after the same thing and you can kind of affect each other, but not necessarily directly, especially if you're on the other side of the board. So today we were playing Power Grid, and I think most people are probably familiar with it, but Power Grid, you're just trying to put, you know, they're not really power plants, they're houses. You're putting houses all over the place, you're trying to build as many houses as you can, and the game ends as soon as you have 17 houses in 17 different cities that you can send power. Well, you don't have to send power to them. You have 17 houses or more, and the game ends not with a score track. It ends with, once one person has 17 houses, the person who can power the most at the end of that round wins. So we were going through, and Kitty, you had not played this before.
I had not.
Spencer had not played it before. And near the end, I noticed that it's like, okay, now it's time to turn from putting houses out there to building power plants so I can actually power enough houses to win. Now, I don't know if Kitty and Spencer saw the same thing, but I do know that based on what was in front of me, I was going to win simply because I was the only one that could power even all the houses we were building. So I actually started stating out loud, okay, Spencer can power this many, Kitty can do this many, I can do this many, putting all of that information out there, not to do table talk, not to kind of discourage anyone, but just to make sure everyone understood
what the end goal is.
Right.
And that, I felt like you were more leveling the playing field than pointing at one direct person, which you were teaching the game.
Right.
That was teaching more to me than it was table talking. However, there is a bidding mechanic in Power Grid. And when I was trying to bid on a power plant and Spencer passed, and then he kept egging you on to continue bidding, like, even if, like trying to get you to either take the thing from me or make me pay more for it. Mm-hmm. That was where, like, I was going to kick my husband. Like, he was driving me crazy. And I don't know how much influence he actually had on you. But, like, you know, just like the, we can't let her have that, Chris. And, like, making you guys a team against me, even though he had no influence on the decision anymore.
True. And so, and that's another interesting thing, because it had zero influence on me. It was basically him. It was not against you. It was against me, kind of like egging me on, because I didn't really need it either. And...
But if you had been a more malleable player, he wouldn't have changed that behavior.
Right.
You know him. He would have done that no matter who was playing.
Right. And it's one of those things where you can, like, well, you know, you probably should bid for that, because if you were to... Now, this is the difference. So what Spencer was doing was, you know, you want that. Like, you got to take it. Like, it's a steal. You got to take it at that price. So not really talking mechanically. It was really just kind of taunting.
See, some of that was that, but some of it was, we can't let her get away with this. Oh. She's in the lead. You can't let her do that. And that was what made me mad.
Double taunting. Taunting Kitty and me at the same time.
Right.
Now.
He's a bit of a master at this.
He is. But now imagine someone says, all right, so you have those three power plants in front of you. You know, if you just changed your strategy and you got rid of the recycling one and you went coal, this one would, like, totally win you the game. And start convincing someone to change their strategy, because that strategy would counter Kitty's strategy or be in line with
help
it.
Help you in your strategy.
So what you're doing is you're taking out your two opponents by pointing out this is an alternate strategy that you can do.
Right.
This makes it – and this is where I draw the line on table talk. And I get accused of this all the time, which is why I draw the line there. I haven't actually said what it is. If you are manipulating the table to your own benefit, I think that everybody at the table should have that same mindset that that's what you're doing. If everyone's playing Power Grid and you're all just giving it to each other and taunting and stuff, that is okay.
Right.
If you are manipulating the table... If I'm like, I am actively trying to make someone think... I am making them do something that's good for them, but really it's good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when the line for me is drawn.
I agree.
Even though everyone just assumes if I give advice, I must be out for myself. I never am. I just try to give advice.
See, I feel like I understand that, like, you, like, there's some people out there, and I think you're in this group, and maybe Patrick is too. I feel like I can be when I'm playing with maybe the right type of people, where you just want it to be the best game possible.
Sure.
You want everyone to be playing at the best level. I think Sydney actually gets accused of being the alpha player, when what she really wants is, I want it to be the best game. I want to win because everyone is playing their best against me. And that feels different than, I'm going to manipulate people.
Like, I'm going to pretend I'm doing one thing when I'm actually doing another.
Yes. And it's very hard to tell the intentions of a person who's giving you advice. Are they trying to manipulate the game for their advantage, or are they trying to elevate the level of the game so everyone's learning, everyone's playing at their best, you're seeing the optimal moves, and you can, or what you think are the optimal moves, what other people, you know, you get to see different sides of it so you can choose the best.
Yeah. Well, I'll actually... When I see a move that is good for someone else, I'll point it out. When I see a move that's good for me... or would be bad for me if a player did it, that's when you don't hear a peep out of me. Yeah. I don't say anything else. So if you're curious of whether or not something's going to affect me, I'm just sitting there quietly.
They're about to make a bad move, and I need to be quiet before they notice.
I did that to you.
You did.
I do have a different kind of table talk that is a little different, and I'm interested to know if you guys think this is okay or not. And basically, it was all stemmed from an Ignite talk I watched, and I urge people to go and listen and watch this. It's a 5-minute talk. If you type Ignite Scrabble talk into Google, you'll find it. And he was talking about competitive Scrabble, and that's a one-on-one competitive situation. And he was talking about tactics he used to get at the other player, and they were manipulative tactics. And the particular tactics he talked about were how he brought up a big spreadsheet full of Hawaiian words, and they look really weird. Like, they're not words. There's, like, too many vowels in Hawaiian words, and they're all crazy, and you look at them and you're like, that is definitely not a word. And so Scrabble obviously has the challenge element if you think someone doesn't have a word. So what he will do is use some of these Hawaiian words so that when they challenge, they are wrong, and that gets them annoyed. And then he will start to use real fake words that are not words, but he's made them and manipulated them in that early move and question whether they're going to get it right or not.
They don't want to challenge then because they've been proved wrong before.
Exactly. And so he does this kind of manipulative tactic, I guess, which isn't as much table talk as it is more of a tactic, but it still feels manipulative and meta. I don't know. Is that okay?
So I say yes. And I say table talk in that scenario would be yes as well. If we were playing, you can play Scrabble four persons, right?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a word game. So if the four of us were playing and I, like, you played a word and I'm like, I don't know if that's a word. I don't know. Kitty, you should challenge that. You should definitely challenge that, Kitty. Because right. Now she...
Is taking on the risk.
I'm trying to manipulate her to take on the risk. And in a competitive game, I think all is fair. Unless the rules specifically say, nope, sorry, duct tape cannot be removed for anything besides, you know, drinking water.
I agree with that too. And I think as well, in that scenario, it doesn't cross the line that you just mentioned. You're not pretending that you're doing one thing and really you're doing another. It's quite clear that you are trying to get her to challenge so that, you know, you don't take the risk. And if someone doesn't see that, then I would say that's on them, because there's nothing too deceptive about that. You're not trying to hide your true intentions. You're just suggesting something that you would like to happen. And if they take you up on it, well, that's on them.
Well, now let's go to Scythe. Let's say that this game was competitive.
Okay.
So we have three games. The scenario we just talked about, there's three players. It's for the finals.
Okay.
Do we say, no, you can't talk? Like for a competitive game, I think you should be able to do.
I agree.
And as long as it's not against the rules, I think you should be able to do that. There's no honor lost.
Yeah, I think so. But it's just, again, where my, I guess I would be as angry as you were if someone was doing what you mentioned before, which is pretending like they're trying to help when they're not. That's the moment where I'm like, this isn't cool anymore, and I'm not okay with it.
But maybe competitive player, so Patrick's like, you know, and competitive player says, wait a minute, this is just helping him.
Yes.
Like, that's where you can counter that table talk. It's when one person is dominating the table, I think that it breaks. There's another scenario I bring up real quick too. Oh, sorry, Katie.
I have a scenario to bring up. And I don't know how often this comes up in board games, but I know it comes up in card games a lot. Any game where you have a partner.
Yep.
And there's secret information that should be secret from your partner. If you table talk with them, you can give them information that would change their action that they should not have. And this comes up, Spencer's family plays spades a lot. And this is where I hear table talk shouted out the most. And that is when you are telling your partner not to play a certain card because you have a card that can trump or you have a card that can beat it. And that's information that your partner should not have when they're making their decision.
Yeah. And then what you do is you start taking this table talk concept into straight up cheating.
Yeah.
Right, because Hanabi is another example of this. You don't know what's in your hand. Everyone else does. Well, if you decide to just tell somebody what's in their hand outside of the rules, because the rules are you give one bit of information. But if you just say, oh, you have, you know, 1, 2, 3 blue right there, you haven't table talked at that point. You've cheated. And I think for something like spades, like, we use table talk as a generic term in spades to basically say, hey, you're cheating.
Yeah,
you
stop
know.
Cheating.
Yep. And then you try to skirt that line, which is where this term comes from. Because in spades, yes, I have this and you should play that. That is obviously cheating. But man, if only it were warmer outside today. Have I cheated? Have I just sent some kind of code? So that's where a table talk in those types of games, especially competitive, is just forbidden. There is no talking because anything could be something to give away information.
But does that keep the game fun?
I think in a straight up drinking at the cabin type of thing, table talk's totally worth it.
Yeah. But if you're playing, you know, competitive spades, I guess you have to be that deep into the actual strategy to be at that level. And then it is still fun for you, even if you're sitting in silence. Like chess players. I feel like chess players are always completely silent, just staring at the board.
Okay, so let's do that. Let's go to a game of chess. Two people silently staring at the board. Either, since it's a two-player game, there's no such thing as table talk between those two players, right? I can say anything I want. You have the full information. Oh, you should definitely move your queen there. You don't have to do that. Like, there's no real manipulation. I might be trying to get in your head, but it's kind of like the Scrabble guy. And, you know, you still are the master of your decisions. But competitive player walks by and looks down and says, oh, if you just move your knight over there, it's checkmate.
Yeah, that's totally not cool.
Not okay. Totally not cool.
So what do you do in that situation, though?
I mean, you can't undo that if you're in that situation, but you say to the person who just did that, you can't do that. That's just not acceptable in any forum. Like, no.
But I would take the move.
Oh, yeah, I would still take the move. Yeah.
I wouldn't. Oh, like, as noble as I am, much as I think that's cheating, somebody told me what to do, and I see it then. Like, I can't unsee it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I would have to take the move.
Absolutely.
Or you'd be like, yeah, I was just going to do that. Hold on.
Yeah.
Right?
I was just debating between that and another move, but yeah, I think I am going to do that. Yeah. But then I guess there's another form of that. If you're trying to get... No, it's just two people playing and you're trying to get in their head for the sake of getting in their head. Like, if you were playing tennis and you kept, like, coughing every time they were about to serve, like, that for me is crossing a line too. It's like, okay, you can do this thing to, like, completely throw me off, to completely, like, viscerally change what I'm doing, but that's not cool. That's not the spirit of what we're competing in.
Well, then you have sportsmanship or gamesmanship.
Yes. Yeah.
Things to think about as well.
Yeah. That's where I think you're crossing the line. When you're just trying to mess with someone to, like, get them completely out of their head and so that they can't think properly, like, that's not cool, because that's, I don't know, it just feels not in the spirit of the game, like you say, sportsmanship-wise. Yeah.
So if we answered Patrick's question, is what Patrick did okay or not? Is it boardsmanship-ish? Should he feel guilty about that win?
I think it's all context. I think if he was getting impinged and hammered by other people and the other person wasn't, I'm okay with it. If he was having an equally okay time and his strategy just wasn't as good as the other person's, then I don't think it was.
He did mention that he didn't think he was going to win, that he ended up winning by a single point.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was intentional to win for himself, or it was just, hey, this person's getting away with what they said they were going to get away with.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he's good. I think you can always take down the called shot. I think that if somebody makes a called shot at the beginning of a game, like, it is everyone else's job at the table to stop that from happening. I think that's why people make a called shot. That's what makes it fun, is they're just like, all right, everyone, come at me. I want to try to do this. You do this all the time. You're like, I'm going to play this combination of decks in this game that everyone says is impossible to win with. Try to beat me. Like, you know, that kind of stuff. You, like, put yourself in these weird situations and play by your own rules.
Yeah. It's basically saying it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, I don't know. I actually do not mind table talk. I would love to have an announcer talking at all times, making sure everyone was aware of everything on the board.
Maybe that's what we need, is a neutral party.
I like this.
Because,
pointing out the moves.
Yeah. I think that it's the level playing field thing.
Yeah.
If you have five people playing a game and two of them are really into it and three of them are not, it's not a level playing field for anybody playing.
Yeah.
And by basically recapping all of the information that everybody has, it's an open board scenario. You're not revealing any hidden information. By recapping that, you do level that playing field. And eventually you don't need to do that because everyone is at that same level and they know what they're looking for. But I don't think it's fun to win a game that you just had an unfair advantage to.
Right.
You know, I still won Power Grid, but not because I saw something and I didn't mention it to everybody that this was going to be a concern in three turns.
Right.
You know, it was narrated. Right. It was very close.
Yeah.
But it was to level the playing field. And I think if table talk is for leveling the playing field, I think that's always okay. Some people might get annoyed by it, but I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey.
Yeah, it's teaching.
Yeah.
As long as you're teaching, as long as you're giving it to everyone, that's fine. And I think as long as it's mostly not geared at a specific person, it's geared at the board.
Right.
Look at the board. What's happening here? Not look what he's doing.
Yeah. And I'll say this, and hopefully no offense, if you get upset because you lost because someone pointed out what you were doing, that wasn't a very good thing to do because someone would have noticed it otherwise.
Yeah.
Your strategy only works because somebody else doesn't realize you're doing it isn't a good strategy.
That's true.
So just take it as a way of getting better, saying, okay, well, this would have worked had they not realized at all what I was trying to do, especially when you say ahead of time, this is what I'm trying to do. But so I don't know. I think that's where my line is drawn. If you are leveling the playing field, I think it's okay. If you're manipulating the board for your own purposes and you're doing it in a way that is not in a way that's subversive, I guess, or just like maybe covert. Sure.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the best move for Kitty when really it's the best move for me. I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
Agreed. All right.
And cheating is never okay.
Yeah. You know, and never comment on someone else's game.
Yeah.
The example I used in the BGG forum is someone who walks by and looks down and is like, oh, four queens. That's a great hand.
You know. Yeah.
So never, ever do that. Don't comment on someone else's game. Don't make any noises. It's fine to look, but don't interact. So, all right. I think this is enough of this. What do you guys think? I wonder if we're going to get as much controversial feedback on this as we did in the last episode. If you want to follow us, you can follow us on Facebook. We're at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. We're at Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. You can follow me at Game Master Chris. And we love iTunes reviews, so leave us one. We like those. If you want to support us and get free entries into all of our giveaways, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon and help us out there. And for the rest of this, Josh just starts talking and doing stuff.
Indeed. Well, Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons. Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan, I Need Your Keys, Your Boots, and Your Bike, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Anne Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Andre Rivera, Adriana Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate Faz Flintham, and Sean Peck. Until next week, when we talk about playing just for fun, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So do we start a magazine that's like the gateway segue to games magazine?
That sounds like a really cool, catchy title as well. I think it would sell well.
I think it would. I mean, I hear magazines are coming back in.
Yeah.
It's all about
print media.
Print media.
That's the future.
Let's do it.
Yes.
You know, what we do here is a lot of that segue stuff.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm just saying.
But you have to seek us out.
Yeah. We're doing our part.